Second class will be. We'll start with the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, then we'll do the six systems, then the Tattva Vivek, and then the Apasampradayas. And the third will be the. We'll continue with Dharma Shastra, and then after that we'll go into Artha and Niti. So the first period means is the main class. This is Prishnaprabha mentioned Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There were two books, the Jivadharma and the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, in which everything that he wrote about is there. Right? Everything is included, right, as far as the philosophy. The difference between the two is that this one is written as a novel, so it has a storyline and situations in which we can see the application. Or the Chaitanya Shikshamrita is basically like an outline of the Jivadharma. Right? So it's like an analysis of the Jivadharma. Then the six systems, that will be, so that means then Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta is understood in its essence. Right? Then the six systems, that will be then studying what are the varieties of philosophy that you can get from the Vedic literature. Right? Means what is actually based on Shastra and is not, as you could say, atheistic. Right? I think the word is, what is the word? It's
Gnostic.
It's Gnostic. It means it believes in a supreme. But most of the philosophies never get past Brahman, basically. Yoga gets to Paramatma, and Vedanta goes all the way to Bhagavan. But the other four only deal with Brahman. So then they're logical, they have a system, though unfortunately, except for Vedanta, they're all incomplete. But what parts they have, they're correct. Problem is when you try to see it outside of the principle of Bhagavan, that's their incompleteness. Right? So in other words, from this study, you can actually understand how philosophy works. Because otherwise, philosophy, you know, it's confusing. Then the third in that series is then the Tattva Vivek. That will explain how these six systems, right? In other words, the six systems are all the ways you can think about philosophy. There aren't any way outside of that. But those are in very clear systematic methods. Now, outside of that, then you get mixes of all those. Does that make sense? A little of Shankhya, a little of Nyaya, a little of this, a little of that. And then they put it together into their own philosophy. And this way you get about, I think it's about 26 different things. And that is all your world philosophies and world religions. Right? Means, so it defines everything. So you can understand how to analyze any philosophy, any religion. Right? Does that make sense? And then the last is then how you end up with your Apasampradayas. And then from that you see is that's just taking the Vedic, going into its own, you know, distraction. You know, but based on Shastra, and then you can see the same principles will be there in these other world religions and philosophies. Because basically they're Apasampradayas, but they're, does that make sense? But they're not necessarily, what do you say, Gnostic, like that. Astic. Many of them are atheistic, like that. Most of them are atheistic. Does that make sense? And then the third, so those two comprise the Shastra Chakshus. In other words, this course that at the end of this year, like when it's done the 3 years, that will give the Bachelor of Divinity. Good. Yeah, and then next year, we will, then in these two periods, we'll start the Masters of Divinity, the first six cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that third period, that's the Bhakti Anuchana. It's a six-year course, cyclic course, where we go through all the 14 books of Vedic literature. Technically, we're actually going only through 18, because the 14th, which is philosophy, we're doing in this class. So basically, you can say the Shastra Chakshus, that is the, you know, essential philosophy. of all the philosophy. So that is a, you know, prerequisite as part of the Bhakti Anucana. So the Bhakti Anucana goes through the other 13 books. So you go through what are the Vedas, the Upanishads, all the rituals, the histories, the Nyaya, the civics, all the different aspects, whatever there is, Ayurveda, astrology, but in just essential form. What is actually the philosophy and culture? So we can understand how to apply it, how to use it. And if you know this, and know the philosophy, in other words, if you understand, that means, you know, what's being given in the Shastra Chakshus and the Bhakti Anucana, you can actually sit down with an astrologer and tell him what is astrology. Because you study astrology doesn't mean you actually understand what astrology is. You know the mechanics of it. They can make your chart, they can interpret so many things like that. Or the person knows ritual, he can do all the different things, or he knows Ayurveda. But they don't actually know it because they don't know how it is a limb of the body of the Lord, how it's an aspect of the philosophy. So they don't see it connected to the culture, they don't see it connected to the philosophy. It makes sense? So you can actually explain to them what is their own science. That's the purpose of this combination. The Bhakti Anucana is so you understand what is the Vedic literatures, how it applies in your life. Right? Does that make sense? As an individual and as a community. Right? Does that make sense? We're going to take it and the universe. Yeah, whatever. You know, you can go on with that. Does that make sense? So these two are quite essential. Like that. We would take these as your core philosophical and cultural classes. Does that make sense? So these are also, means your primary and secondary also study these. We would consider these to be our preliminary studies. Because our main study is Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is Bhagavatam. So for us, that's where study starts. So the Shastra Chakshus is so that one is prepared to study the Bhagavatam. Right? Bhagavatam means the Bhagavatam is such that even if one has not read any other book, one starts there, one will always get benefit. But the volume of material that's there, the depth that's there, it will be more appreciated having finished this course and spent some time on the other course. Does that make sense? Being the essence of the Vedic literature, that means it's the essence of the philosophy and the essence of the culture. Does that make sense? So that's what these two courses are. Bhakti Anucana is the essence of the culture, and the Shastra Chakshus is the essence of the philosophy. Does that make sense? So that's how it's been divided up. Okay? So two courses are running, two periods for the Shastra Chakshus, or the Darshan Chakshus, Vedanta Chakshus, Prema Chakshus, means that's always two periods, and then one period for the Bhakti Anucana. And then we can see in the future, once one's finished that course of the Bhakti Anucana, then what can go into that place for those who have actually finished it. Like that. Okay, so now we start with the Jiva Dharma. Oh, I mentioned, yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada said, so Prabhupada is basically saying there's no need to study any of the other books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's all in here, right? So that's the point. Also, it's when we're dealing with this, on both of these books, we're referencing from the other books of the Thakur and bringing them into here, so that whatever is the speciality of all the other books are all already included, like that. Or when we do the Upadeshamrita, then, you know, things from his books, anything. So whatever's our main study, the essential things are already included, right? In next year's course, they're actually two separate. That means also in the study, so you understand how it works, is there's the main books, and then there is the supplementary books. The main books are Prabhupada's books. The supplementary are the Acharyas, right? Because Rupa Goswami gives a Nectar Devotion, the sixth chapter, is that you approach the previous Acharyas through your Acharya. There's no such thing as, well, Prabhupada says this and Jiva Goswami says that, and so it seems to be contradictory, you know, so we choose Jiva. There is no one in Braj will accept you. Just know it. You can do that if you want to stay in the material world. You want to go back to Godhead? Then you take your Acharya. Because your Acharya is not illusion. He's not conditioned. So he is saying what Jiva Goswami says. Just we're unable to see it. Yes?
How does that work in the other direction? Spiritual masters after Prabhupada?
They're saying what Prabhupada says. Does that make sense? In other words, the philosophical development or presentation is fixed at Prabhupada. You understand? So it's his siksha. After him, then the gurus are giving what Prabhupada calls relevant instruction. That's the term he uses. Right? He's the Adi Guru. So what he says is the position. And then others are giving relevant instruction. Means, in other words, they're showing you how to make the Adi Guru's instructions relevant to yourself and your situation. Does that make sense? So that means in the parampara, then you'll always look at it, you'll have your guru, then there'll be Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati, like this. So after 100 generations, still it's your guru. You understand? Just like if you meet a Sri Vaishnav, he'll say, here's his guru, and Ramanuja. Then Ramanuja and Yamunacharya, the Alwars, they don't bother with who's in between. Not that there's no respect, but you don't have to worry about that, because everybody is only saying what the founder is saying. Does that make sense? And same time as one studies the previous acharyas, but from the mood that the founder establishes. In other words, we approach Rupa and Jiva and Vishwanath and Baladev through how Prabhupada presents it. That's actually parampara. So there never is contradiction. One sees a contradiction, no, that's a mundane vision. Or just one hasn't contemplated enough. But there is no such thing. That's what, when we were discussing Manu, there's no such thing as a contradiction in the scriptures. We see it as a contradiction, but there isn't. They're dealing with different aspects. Yes?
So these Prabhupada Nugas, they haven't contemplated enough? Or
Prabhupada Nugas?
Yeah, I mean, Ridvik's...
No, they haven't contemplated enough. Okay. Yeah, so... If someone says there's a difference, or Baladev and Vishwanath, and they're opposed to each other, no, there's not. They're just taking different perspectives. Right? One is taking it, what's connected to Krishna is in line with pure devotion, if it's, you know, of course, if it's parampara. Therefore, it's bhakti. You know? And Vishwanath is saying is that in the true sense, bhakti is prema. So everything else is preliminaries to bhakti. You understand? So the two don't contradict each other, because Baladev is saying what is in connection to bhakti is counted as good as, but he doesn't say it is. It's as good as. Just like iron and fire is as good as. So what does that mean? You get the same effect. But it still is not. Like iron is not fire, but iron in fire is as good as fire. It's still different. So therefore, sadhana bhakti is as good as bhakti, but it is still separate. Because bhakti means prema, devotion. Bhakti means love. Does that make sense? But it's in pursuance of love that we're doing what we're doing. Does that make sense? So there's no contradiction. But some will try to make it into a contradiction. Right? If you get too intellectual. So that's the idea here, is we're trying to cultivate the intellectual ability without getting enamored by it. Without having a need to be absorbed intellectually because it's fun. You understand? Just like people get absorbed emotionally because it's fun. You know, or get into their occupational skill because it's fun. They get distracted by it. Right? You have to drive your car to work, but the guy's overly into his car and he's always out there polishing it, and don't lean on the car, you get fingerprints, and you know, hey, you know, no coffee in the car, and you know, just doing a whole trip so everybody's uncomfortable. Right? No, relax. You know what I'm saying? Use the car, use it nicely. You know what I'm saying? But it's just natural. Just like a very interesting thing is that means in the time that from when I joined to now, I can remember noting 3 good drivers that I've ever driven in a car with. Right? So that's a long time, 3 drivers. Right? And so because they're just very natural, right? They're aware of the road. They're aware of everything on the road. They deal with the. They have respect for the car, and they can go to point A to B in the most efficient way possible, right? So, strangely enough, the other day I bumped into one. It was a little dinky Indian lady, you know. I think she's a PhD in something, I don't know, some kind of psychology, you know, some kind of little thing, so, you know. And so that, you know, and she has this little dinky car, you know, what is the little, you know, like that. But when I was driving, she handles the steering wheel. The only other time I've seen that, because I didn't see it in the other two drivers, is race car drivers drive like that. You hold the wheel, you know, you have that little thing where the horn is, you hold above that. And when you turn, let's say you're going, you want to turn left, you hold on with your right, you start to turn and you loosen with the left, though you don't let go, and you move it up. And when you get to the top, then you tighten the left and loosen the right and then go back down. And then keep doing that however much you have to, or the other way. You have both hands on the wheel, you have full control. And I'm sitting there going, how is it this little old Indian lady knows how to drive like that? Because the last I've seen that is race car drivers, right? So then, you know, it's a... like that, so that was, you know. But she was doing so naturally. It wasn't a trip, you know, like here it is, yeah, you know, riding the Grand Prix or something. She's just driving as if it's normal, because it's actually the best way to do it. But, you know, I was like, so that's the point, is that you can do something expertly without it becoming an identity. Right? Because an identity is an upadhi. It's unnecessary. Right? Sarvupadi vinir muktam. Right? Means giving up all upadis. Means you're good at it, but doesn't mean, like Prabhupada, he was an expert cook, but you don't think of him as a chef. But we have devotees in our movement we think of as chefs. Prabhupada was the best kirtanier, but we don't think of him as a musician. But there are kirtaniers with our music. They identify as musicians. Prabhupada dressed very well. Means if you look at all the pictures, all the ways he could dress. And all that, from very sophisticated to very simple. But you don't think of him as, you know, a socialite, you know, or his conversational ability. He could talk to anyone, anywhere, and everyone would be impressed. But you don't think of him as that kind of a thing. He's some kind of social animal, right? Does that make sense? You know, he could quote Sanskrit. He knows Sanskrit better than any of our Sanskritists in our movement now know Sanskrit. Right? But you don't think of him as a Sanskrit scholar. But these individuals, you say he's a Sanskrit scholar. Does that make sense? So that means there's no upadis, though he is perfect at them. That's what we're trying to develop. Right? That's the purpose of these courses. Is that one develops this naturally without it becoming, you know, a thing. Does that make sense? You know, so it has its advantages, is that for the individual, the lifestyle and everything will be improved. Those who associate with them will get the benefit like that. What is, you can say the weakness of it is most people will not notice that that's what's going on. They won't notice that things are developing and going so well because of the person's lifestyle and values. They'll just think it just happens. Because most people, if they're making something happen, they make sure everybody knows they're doing it. You understand? And then the problem is that when they stop doing it, then it's, oh no, another one, and this and that, and my faith, you know, like this. No, this is just, you don't even know it's going on. Does that make sense? I guess, what is it? 4 months of no smoke, they get used to it again. Right? Yeah. Okay. Is that okay? Any other questions on this or why we're doing? Oh, I didn't finish that. So then that means we can see is that the first 2 years of this of the Shastra Chakshus is Prabhupada's books, and then this third year is the Acharya's works. No? Right? So, but when we go into the next three courses, they run simultaneously. So one will be the Bhagavatam, and the other will be the works of the Acharyas. Then the last will be the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then the works of the Acharyas. Yeah?
What about this year?
This is the third year. Time goes quick. Yeah, this is the third year. So this, all, the whole thing is all the works of the acharyas. Okay. So this is what's called, what is this called? Yeah, Amnaya Tattva Niryas. That's this course within it. And the other one is, I'll have to look. Yes.
So now, this is a Vedic way to study.
This is a Vedic way to study.
Like you mentioned before, like systematic study.
Yes.
Systematic.
In this, then there are three different things, because we've done this, the chronological study, you know, of Prabhupada's work, you know, and then we've done the thematic study, and then we're doing the acharyas. But in the other ones, the acharyas, they've written the systematic studies, the thematic studies. So the work of the acharyas and the thematic study is the same thing. So that's why it becomes two. In here, it's Prabhupada's written the thematic study. So that's why then it end up as 3 years instead of, I mean, it's three courses instead of two. Make sense? Yeah? Okay. So, so Jiva Dharma? Sorry? More?
Come on.
Yeah, no, it didn't work for all of her either. Okay. Anyone understands that or? No? I'm really becoming a relic here. Okay. That's one thing I've noticed is before it was a lot of people got what I was talking about. Then the last couple of years, many people got. And I've noticed from just the last 2 months, I'll make a joke, no one gets it. Absolutely no one. So I'm not sure what to do. So. You don't know Oliver Twist. He went to the guy and said, please, sir, can I have more? He didn't get more. He sang a song, but he didn't get any more.
Okay.
You have to ask him. You have to talk to Fagin here. Does that mean just... I guess it's a whole change in generation. That's probably it. What are we on now? We're on the X or Y generation now or something.
Y.
Y. Okay. Y. Okay. So that's great. That means it's the end of the me generation, finally. Okay.
The next one will be the C generation.
C.
X, Y, C.
Oh, C. Okay. Summary of chapter 1, the eternal and temporary dharmas of the eternal, of the living entities, right? It's very important to make a note what's eternal and what's temporary. This will come up again and again. Jai ho, sir. Is eternal means what is directly connected to the soul. Temporary means what the soul is using within the material world as the forms to express the eternal. Does that make sense? Very important. In the spiritual world, they also have the original origin of the reflection of the temporary dharma. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, they're following the Varnashram system as a culture. That's the secondary. That's the temporary. Does that make sense? But there, it's part of their sadhana. So, therefore, the eternal, there's no difference. It's just one thing. Just like here, there's a difference between the soul and the body. There isn't. You understand? Here, there's a difference between the forms and endeavors used and the devotion. There's not. Right? You don't have to, because everything's spiritual there. Here, you're dealing with the duality of spiritual and material. So we have to make this distinction, but we have to really understand is that the eternal is the essential, but the temporary is the medium that you use. You can't express the eternal without the temporary. So but eternal is primary, temporary is secondary. Right? So there's always a hierarchy. So if one has to be compromised, it's always the temporary, never the eternal. right? But it doesn't mean it's given up or not used or it's not important. Like Varnashram is temporary. Oh, therefore we don't care about it. No, it's not primary, but it's what we use, right? Cooking is the most important thing. You know, cutting vegetables is secondary. Does that make sense? But we can still cook even if we can't cut the vegetables. It comes out a little funny, but one cook here back, I think it was, maybe it was 70, 73 maybe. He walked in the front gate and then whoever was here, I think it was Bhakti John maybe. Then he came, oh great, here, brought him into the kitchen, told him, okay, now you just do this, 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 and then he walked off, and now he was the new cook. So then the Garga Muni was in Calcutta, so Mayapur and Calcutta were always connected. And so then he came out one time, and then he sat down for prasad, and so this new cook, all he knew is that you take the vegetables as they were whole, put them in a pot of water and boil them whole. You know, there's no cutting, no preparing, nothing. So then he Garga Muni sat down and they put this whole green papaya, not peeled. I mean, when we say whole, I mean not peeled. Whole green papaya, like that, put down on his plate. You know, that was lunch. Needless to say, he got up, got in his car, went back to Calcutta. Like that, yeah. Mayapur had to do some quick thinking on their feet to work the situation out. I think that devotee was removed as the cook. That was one of the first steps they did. Yeah, so it means, in other words, it can be done. It's not ideal, but it can be done. Okay. With it, yes. How much of a summary is this? It's probably, what, 60%?
Around
60, 50 to 60%. In other words, what we've done is we've kept the storyline and the philosophy. You know, so the storyline is there with the culture and all that, and much more excessive poetic aspects that are very wonderful, those are not in here. So if you want to get the full benefit, then it's advised that you read the chapter on your own. That's what we recommend. Then you get the full benefit. This is just so we can go through, because otherwise, if you have the full thing, we probably won't get through it in this one term. Yes.
There's no commentary on this.
It itself has its own commentary, like that. That's what Prabhupada was saying, is these two books are complete in themselves. They have all of Bhaktivinoda Thakura's, whatever teachings he's given in all of his books is all in these two. So that's why we're studying these specifically. Jayavidharana and Chaitanya Shikshanika. And, yeah, okay. Okay. Within this world, okay, this is the actual thing, right? This is not a... This is means this is not, now we're reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this is not a what do you call it? A, it's not the, yeah. Okay. Within this world, the island of Jambudweep is most excellent. In Jambudweep, the land of Bharatvarsha is eminent, and within Bharatvarsha, the topmost place is Gaudabhumi, Bengal. Sri Navadweep Dham is the crown jewel of Gaudabhumi. Shining eternally in spiritual splendor, the region of Godruma prospers in one corner of Sri Navadvip Dham, upon the banks of the Bhagirathi Ganga. According to the spiritual criteria, Sri Navadvip Dham is an exact replica of Nandagram in Braja. Right. So now we have the whole universe, because we're taking, what's the universe for? The universe is for going back to Godhead. That's why it's here, reforming the conditioned soul. So that means, of all the places in the whole universe, the best place is Jambudweep. Because in Jambudweep, then there's actually endeavor for spiritual life. All other aspects other than Jambudweep, even the other earthly dweepas, those are where they're receiving the benefits of their previous karma. Right? So they're having some good karma. So therefore it's a little good karma, so they're on the Jambudweep. I mean, not on Jambudweep, they're the other dweepas. Right, so they're a little bit more elevated than the human beings here. A little bit more than that, they're in the Antariksha, they're in the planets below. right? But they're not divine. It's not in connection with the Lord, right? But they're pious, right? Right. That's why we're not so fired up about piety. Because all the big demons, they're all pious. The daityas are all pious. The danavas, they sometimes tend to be a little rough and ready, right? But the daityas are all... Does that make sense? It's like a rough example would be, let's say you have bad P criminals, right? So the guys in suits that sit in offices and deal with the politicians and businessmen and all that and do it, have their parties and that, that's the daityas, right? The guys on the motorcycles, that's the danavas. Okay, you got the, you get it? It's not too archaic.
The guys in the White House.
Huh?
The guys in the White House.
We're not going to get into that. That we cover in civics. Yeah. Okay. So is that, does that make sense? That's how you tell. So therefore, the lower planets, these are, have that combination of these two groups. So they're pious, but one is sophisticated with that, but they end up on the lower planets. So they have much more opulence, almost like the heavenly planets. But the heavenly planets means they're devotees of the Lord. Right? That's why Lord Chaitanya is asking them, when he's appearing, then they're also to appear along with him, because they have faith in the Lord, they serve the Lord. They're devotees. So if they're on Swa, they're devotees. Right? Does that make sense? If they're on the Bhuvar, that means they're not devotees. So they're pious. That's why we don't really care about piety. Devotees are making a big thing about piety today. You have to be pious, but the demons are pious. So it's no big deal. Right? Does that make sense? So, of the boor, then of the earthly, then only Jambudvip is what is where you can make that choice and make the endeavor. The other, I think it's eight, right?
Six.
There's seven. The other six, they're already living the results of good piety. Just they're a little bit more. Right? Below that, they're a lot more. And then the heavenly planets, then more than that. Does that make sense? Okay. But then Bharadvarsha, because that's where the Vedic culture is understood. Within that, then Bengal is the best, because they know about Lord Chaitanya. And within that, then Navadvip. Like that. Now he's not saying Godrim is now the best, he's saying it shines specially, because that's where the holy name is established and other things. But Navadvip as a whole, because it's the nine processes. But he's writing from Godrim, this book is taking place in Godrim, so it's special. Okay, so the Navadvip is a replica of Nandagram. It is Vrindavan. Okay, in the footnote. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. As Sri Gaurachanda appeared in Navadvip, it is therefore the crest jewel of all holy places. Offenders are object of punishment at other holy pilgrim places. But in Navadvip Dham they are purified. The example is the two brothers Jagai and Madhai, who committed great offenses yet still received Gauranitai. What to speak of other places? At Vrindavan, the offenders are punished, but a person who has committed hundreds of offenses can easily receive the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu and overcome those offenses in Navadvip Dham. For this reason, sages endlessly praise Navadvip of Gauramandala. Right? That doesn't mean you're confident in going along with it. It means that if mistakes are there, then one can get purified. Does that make sense? But that means offenses committed here have to be gotten rid of here. You're not going to get rid of them somewhere else. You commit offense here. You do something good here, you get 1,000 times the benefit. You do something bad, you get 1,000 times the reaction. So if you're going to outside the Dham try to purify yourself, it would take you 3 years to get an equivalent of 1 day here. Right? It's not going to happen. You purify yourself here. He who lives in Navadvip Dham is very fortunate, for he achieves attraction for Krishna. He who happens to go there becomes free from all offenses. What one obtains by traveling to all the holy places is attained just by remembering Navadvip. Right? It means you have to go to the other places, but you get the same benefit just by remembering Mayapur. Right? In this way, the scriptures sing. He who sees Navadvip Dham gets ecstatic love of Krishna, birth after birth. Even one who goes to Navadvipa desiring to gain material comforts through pious activities will not take another birth. Right? Because it doesn't exactly work out. You get purified. Go ahead. Try to build a house here. Make yourself comfortable. See how it goes. Yeah. The Shastras say that one who walks around Navadvipa attains the fruit of millions of Ashwamedha yajnas at every step. Right? It's just by walking the steps, right? So then you think, so far to walk to the Gurukul. Think of all the Ashwamedha yajnas. Right? It only takes 100 to get to Indra. Now look what he's got. Now he's doing okay. Right? You know, okay. And one who lives in Navadvipa and chants mantras obtains the sound of Chaitanya as his mantra and easily gets freed from Maya. What yogis obtain after 10 years that other kirtas obtain in 3 nights in Navadvipa. Catch it? It's still 1,000 times. You understand? 3 days, it equals more than 3 years outside. So it means what you get in 10 years at another tirtha, you get in 3 days here. So if it's not a tirtha, you don't get a whole lot. You know, like that. That liberation obtained by Brahman realization at other holy places is obtained simply by bathing the Ganges and Navadvipa. Right? So you get Brahman realization just by taking bath here. Thus, all types of liberation, Salokya, Sarupya, Sharshti, and Samipya, and Nirvana can be obtained in Navadvipa without speculative practice, right? Just by taking bath. Right? Falling at the feet of the pure devotees in Navadvipa, Bhukti and Mukti, personified material enjoyment and liberation, remain there as obedient servants. Not caring for their blessings, the devotees kick them away, but still they do not leave the devotees' feet. Right? The devotees aren't interested, but they stay anyway. Right? And that's how it works. See, the thing we have to get used to is if you want it, you don't get it. If you don't want it, you have it. It's just the way it is. We had this idea, I want it and I'll have it. No, it's not going to happen. Does that make sense? It can't work. But you have the dynamic. You know, it goes this way, it goes away, it goes this way. Does that make sense?
There's truth in that saying, you can't have your cake and eat it.
Yeah, you can't have your cake and eat it.
Yeah. But it seems like, you know, we have two conditions. To get all the benefits from them, or we just counteract them by...
No, you're getting the benefits, just one, you're not appreciating them, but you're going on as if you're not. You know, just be like one has a bad habit, though even though one's in a good situation, you still carry on with the bad habit. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're from a wealthy family, very aristocratic, very, you know, socially well-established family, right? But somehow or another you end up in the street, you've forgotten all about this family, and you've been there a long time, okay? Now, somehow or another you're found, they bring you back to the house, they clean you up, they put you in nice clothes, they have a special dinner, all the special guests come over. How are you going to behave? Yes, they're still like a street person. So how are they going to deal with you? They're going to have a tendency to deal with you like a street person. But you're not a street person. You understand? You chant. It means you remove. There is no sins. There is nothing. But we go on with the sinful mentality, and so therefore, then we regenerate things again. But one is liberated. That's the thing. We have to become. No, we're already. That's why we put no focus on becoming purified, becoming liberated in that. We know it's there. We avoid what's improper and do what's right. We avoid what's improper simply because then you're not doing what's right. If I'm doing what's wrong, how will I do what's right? But we're not saying, I'm avoiding what's doing wrong, so that way then I'm purified and therefore then everything becomes nice. No, that's not what becomes nice. It's because you chant and serve Krishna. That's what's nice. It's not because I'm not doing bad things. That's what's good. Because I'm serving Krishna. That's what's special. Does that make sense? So sometimes devotees put too much emphasis on the purification and that. So Narta Nivriti is getting rid of bad things because you're replacing it with the good. It's not that I've become very good at not doing bad things, but I haven't developed doing good. You know what I'm saying? That's why that we were saying before, that emphasis on being pious is not the perspective. Because the demons are pious. The demons know if you're pious, you get better material results. Right? So if we're putting an emphasis on piety, means we are putting an emphasis on material results. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Is that okay? So in other words, it's just a matter of getting used to the idea of the spirit. Because for us, being on the spiritual platform, that's the beginning. Does that make sense? One is trying to develop love for Krishna. Does that make sense? You're on the, all the residents of the spiritual world are on the spiritual platform. But they have love for Krishna. So they act in that love. So we're on the spiritual platform, but we're not acting with that love. Does that make sense? So that's what we're practicing. That's the sadhana. Right? But because of the foolishness of thinking, if my situation is good, then everything's good. If I have money, then everything's perfect. Or I have a house, everything's perfect. Or I have a family, everything's perfect. Or I have a position, everything's perfect. No, it's what you do with the money, the family, the house, that makes it perfect or not. I have a house. Someone has a house. Is the house perfect or not? The house itself.
No.
It's not a consideration. It's not perfect or imperfect. You use the house for Krishna, it's perfect. You don't use the house for Krishna, then it's not perfect. You know what I'm saying? This rock, is it perfect or not perfect? It's just a rock. You use it for Krishna, it's perfect. You don't use it for Krishna, it's not perfect. You understand? So being on the spiritual platform, that's just normal. Right? Now, using that for Krishna, that's perfect. Not using it for Krishna, then that's not. And being on the, not being on the spiritual platform, being on the mundane platform, that's just sad. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that work? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned the Nandagram.
Nandagram.
The other regions of the Nandagram, Russia and Russia.
They're all there, but it's mainly that has that flavor. Like that. To see, Navadvipa was created by Radharani. When there was a discussion about this pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, she created Navadvipa. So actually, Navadvipa is part of, is a section of Vrindavan. Like that. So it was created by Radharani. So Navadvipa is created by Radharani. So sometimes they make the distinction, well, there's Vrindavan, but there's Navadvipa, but then Vrindavan, you're Radharani. No, Navadvipa is created by Radharani. You know what I'm saying? The other is Yogamaya creates it, because if she's created it, then it's too... It doesn't have the flavor, you know, of the mugdata, of not knowing what'll happen. So therefore, she's just a girl there, and he's just a boy there. Does that make sense? So then... Notting Hill or something. So that, you understand? So, but they're there, but it's Yogamaya arranges it. But Navadvipa, Radharani is personally arranged for Krishna's satisfaction, so he can taste the mood of Radharani. So it doesn't lack in anything that Braj has. Sometimes it's said, well, there's Vrindavan, it's the same place. Just here it has that element of Chaitanya, that aspect of that ecstasy of being absorbed. Right? Well, in Vrindavan, then you have the different kinds of flavors that are there. So Vrindavan is unique in that all these different flavors are expressed. But here, because of the Sankirtan, it always has that uplifting flavor. Well, in Vrindavan, that taste that's there, sometimes, you know, not necessarily the separation, but... You know, if Radharani's upset, you get those angry elements, you get this, you get that, you get, you know, all the different man, this, that. Here, Lord Chaitanya may taste that himself, but we're assisting in that, so we're always just serving. You understand? So it has a consistent mood. Well, in Vrindavan, then we're more absorbed in those. Does that make sense? So the difference is taste, not in the place. That liberation. the fruits obtained by staying 100 years at the seven holy cities can be attained by staying one night in Navadvipa Dham. In conclusion, Navadvipa is the topmost tirtha. Taking shelter of it, the living entities can cross Kali Yuga. Right? So this is the place. Right? So the point of being in the place is to develop that love for Krishna. Yes. I still have another paragraph. Really? First page. Oh, good point. In days past, okay, so that opens then where it's happening, right? Because when you're doing a dhyanam, the first thing you do is establish the place. Right? Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpadrumara. In the land of Vrindavan, in the divine range of Vrindavan, under the Kalpadrumara tree. Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpadrumara. Srimad Ratnagara Simhasanasto. Then on the divine jeweled throne. Right? Now you've made the place. Shri Shri Radha Srila Govinda Deva is sitting Radha. Yeah, something that can't catch me. But then they're there with all their associates. So the place, then the deity, and then the associates and pastimes, right? So we've established the place. Now within that place, and specifically where this pastime is going to take place, then the personalities, and then their activities. In days past, the woody bowers of Godrum provided places of spiritual retreat to many saintly souls. Prajumna Kunj, a simple meditation cottage covered with vines and densely foliage, was located near the spot where Sri Surabhi Devi had long ago worshipped Sri Gaurasundar. Right? That's the special thing of Godrum, because that's where Surabhi, then she came and did her worship there. Right? So, yeah. The present occupant of this cottage, Sri Premdas Paramahamsa Babaji, was a Siksha Sisha of Sri Prajumna Brahmachari, an eternal associate of the Supreme Lord. Right? So Prajumna Brahmachari is the Lord's associate. Here. Footnote. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 10.35, Prajumna Brahmachari is described as the 13th branch of the tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Prajumna Brahmachari is described in the Antya Lila, second chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, who changed his name to Nishinyananda. Oh, okay. So he's the one that did that meditation of the path. While coming from the house of Raghava Pandit at Panihati to the house of Shivananda, Lord Chaitanya Prabhu appeared in the heart of Nishinyananda Brahmachari. To acknowledge this, Nishinyananda Brahmachari used to accept as edibles the food of three deities, namely Jagannath Nrisimhadev and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, second chapter, verses 48 through 78. Upon receiving information that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was proceeding toward Vrindavan from Kulia, Nrisimhananda absorbed himself in meditation and by his mental activities began constructing a very nice road from Kulia to Vrindavan. All of a sudden, however, he broke his meditation and told the other devotees that this time Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not go to Vrindavan, would travel only as far as a place known as Kanai Natshala. This is described in Madhya Lila, chapter 1, verses 155 through 162. The Goro Gano Deshtipika 74 says, Aveshas cha tatagyeyo misre prajumnya samgyake. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu changed the name of Prajumna Misra, or Prajumna Brahmachari, to Nrisimhananda Brahmachari, for in his heart Lord Nrisimhadev was manifest. It is said that Lord Nrisimhadev used to talk with him directly. Okay. So that's whose kunj it is, though I don't think he comes in very often, or at all. Once he comes. He comes once to speak. But otherwise, everything's going to be about this who we just discussed. What's his name? Premdas Paramahamsa. Supreme Das Paramahamsa Babaji was a refined scholar and was fully conversant with all the conclusions of the Shastras. His daily routine comprised chanting 200,000 names of Krishna and humbly offered hundreds of prostrate obeisances to all Vaishnavas. After performing his daily Madhukari, he would read aloud the Prema Vivarta, his eyes brimming with tears of exultation. On these occasions, the saintly devotees from the neighboring cottages eagerly gathered around Sri Premdas Babaji, Paramahamsa Babaji, to listen. Prema Vivarta, that's... who's that? Jagrananda. He wrote this. So he wrote this, and it's just pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, but it's not done in any specific order. It's just as he felt like writing them, like that. This... He's Satyabhama in the Dwarka Lila. So therefore, he's the left wing. So left wing tends to do whatever they please. Right wing does what they're supposed to. Right. So.
And also, so some
prasadas
are given to some are real.
Means Prajumna is an actual personality, but this is a novel he just has written in. Sorry? It's not so much that is what will affect the things, because in other words, most are very careful about the mood. Generally, we don't, as a general principle, manifests strongly the left-wing mood. Because as devotees of Lord Chaitanya, then one is in a mood of servitorship. One is servant to Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, the element of right and left isn't prominent. Right? What servitorship means, you're doing what should be done. So the flavor, you don't see it in Rupa and Rati and Vishwanath like that. Very rare you'll ever get something like that. But, you know, Satyabhama, Jagannatha is unique in that, you know, there's somebody that makes that promise. It gives some flavor. Just like in the Dwarka Leela, then Satyabhama, you know, Krishna's going to go out to fight the demon, she wants to come. Right? Yeah, Rukmini would never dream of asking that. You know, it's not done. You know, that's his occupation, that. But for Satyabhama, it doesn't matter. You know, she's going. You know, and then to go to the heavenly planet. She wants the parijata. It doesn't mean, it doesn't matter, we'll start a war. It's just, hey, you know, I want it. And so you don't have, it's not a common thing like that. So therefore, you won't have that here. So he would write what would actually work for the principle. Does that make sense? Like that. So in other words, we keep the left-wing element. We leave the left-wing element for the house. If that is the mood, we keep it at home. You know, public we use right. Does that make sense? That's, yes? No? Okay. One afternoon, having completed his chanting of Sri Harinam, Babaji Maharaj was reciting the Prema Vivarta while seated in his bower, shaded by vines of madhavi and jasmine. At that moment, a sannyasi approached him and fell flat before him in utter humility, remaining prostrate for a considerable length of time. Coming out of his meditation and seeing the sannyasi offering obeisances, Babaji Maharaj felt overcome with modesty. Right? The Babajis are sannyasis, but it's the fourth stage, so there's no identification as sannyas. It's just that they're just functioning as Vaishnavas. So then the etiquette of a sannyasi, this and that, they don't have to follow. Does that make sense? The etiquette meaning you're walking down the road, it's very formal. So the Paribhachakacharya means, as in this case, the sannyasi is in saffron, he has a danda, these kind of things. People come, he offers they offer obeisances, he gives blessings, all those kind of things as he's in that position. Babaji doesn't need to do that. One is he can skirt around and not be noticed, or if people offer obeisances, he can offer obeisances back, all these different things. Right? The sannyasi doesn't stay at so much at Grihastha's places. Like, he may visit and then leave because it's formal. The Babaji can actually just stay with Grihasthas. Does that make sense? He's not bound by these rules. because he's just taking the position of a devotee. Does that make sense? So he's not a brahmachari, he's not a grihastha, he's not a vanaprastha, not a sannyas, he's just a devotee. Like that. Does that make sense? But they actually can function on that because of the realization. Does that make sense? So therefore, here they're making a distinction. Is sannyas, so even though it's in a lower position, socially it's counted as higher. Spiritually it's lower, but socially it's higher. So that's why then Prem Das would be embarrassed. Because now the sannyasi, who is like the head of the social strata, then he's coming and offering obeisances and all that, and he's just a devotee. Does that make sense? Yeah. Coming out of his meditation and seeing the sannyasi offering obeisances, Babaji Maharaj felt overcome with modesty. So Babaji Maharaj also fell down upon his hands and knees in front of the sannyasi, crying out, "Oh, my Sri Chaitanya, oh Nityananda, kindly be merciful to this fallen wretch." The sannyasi then said, "Prabhu, I am very low and without means. Why do you embarrass me like this?" After touching the feet of Babaji Maharaj in awed respect, the sannyasi stood up. Babaji Maharaj was quick to offer his guest a straw mat, upon which he sat in the assembly of Vaishnavas. Right? So therefore we see when in Manu is describing the rules of a grihastha and taking care of guests, that applies to everybody. Just the grihastha can do it with all kinds of facilities. But that's why it says the simplest is just a grass mat, some water, some kind words. Because that, the brahmachari, the vanaprastha, they can all offer. The grihastha can offer more, so they offer more, but it's for everybody, right? Does that make sense? And we see here the sannyasi, he could, deal in a different way, but he also is taking that very humble position, right? And in this case, since he's dealing with someone superior, it is the safe position. Does that make sense? But he's doing it not because it's safe, but because he also has that attitude. Right? Yes.
Sometimes we see devotees who are displaying some of these Babaji tendencies, maybe not with the same realization. How to deal with that?
They just deal as devotees. In other words, if you have something to do with them, you deal as devotees. Mm-hmm. That's all. If you don't, then you go your own way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's not like we should particularly distance ourselves from that.
It depends upon how extreme it is. Yeah. The more extreme, the more distance. The less. In other words, if they're doing it, they don't know about it. You just don't. But if it's an identity, then bigger the identity, the greater the space. Because the identity takes up space, so you have to stand outside the identity. That's all. So. With a voice choked with love, Babaji Maharaj asked the sannyasi, "Prabhu, how may this fallen soul be of any service to you?" Because he sees all living entities as servants of Krishna. Therefore, you have affection for other devotees. Right? Because otherwise, you could say he doesn't even know him, but he knows the soul. So therefore, that's not a problem. Right? So he'll deal nice with everybody. He's in his kunj. How many people come there? Right? Materialists don't go out of their way to come to some Babaji's kunj. So all you're going to have is other saintly persons. The occasional acquisitive person, and the different animals that are there in trees. So he's nice to all of them. So now this one's come, so he's nice. The sannyasi put down his begging bowl and addressed Babaji Maharaj with folded hands. "Respected master, I am a very fortunate soul." Right? This mentions his putting down his begging bowl because it's part of his identity. Right? The Babaji has a bowl, but it's not part of the scene. It's just, if you go out begging, you need to put it somewhere. So therefore, they may have a bowl. Right? Yeah, like that. Does that make sense? But with the sannyasi, it's part of his paraphernalia. He has his kamandalu, he has his bowl, he has his danda, he has his cloth for purifying the water, he has his umbrella. So these are his identity. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why "Respected master, I'm a very unfortunate soul. I have thoroughly studied the six branches of philosophy." Right? That's what you're going to study next period. Right? "And has spent many years in serious debate. and contemplation upon them, right? So that's the Bates, one of the things in the Upanuchan in the third class. I had accepted initiation from the sannyas order and had traveled widely to all places of pilgrimage and gradually attained the final stage of sannyas, the Paramahamsa level. In Kashi, I accepted the vow of silence and contemplated deeply the teachings of Sri Shankaracharya as summarized in his Mahavakyas. These Mahavakyas are... Sri Shankaracharya compressed the essence of his philosophy into a number of statements from the Vedas, such as Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, Pragyanam Brahma, Brahma is consciousness, I am Atma Brahma, the soul is Brahman, and Tattvamasi, you are that, calling them the Mahavakyas, great sayings of the Vedas. So all these are actually verses from the Veda, but the context of, they're kind of taken out of context, like that, because it means you are means they'll take you are that means you are the supreme Brahman. No, you are that means you are Brahman, right? Then there's the supreme Brahman, but everything's Brahman, right? I am Brahman. Yes, I am Brahman, but it doesn't mean that I am the full Brahman. I am Brahman. I'm 1/10,000 of the tip of a hair Brahman. And then there's unlimited Brahman. You understand? So all it is all of them are true, but he's taken them out of context to try to make it sound like I am God. Right? Does that make sense? Brahman is consciousness. It is consciousness. So everything is actually consciousness. But this Brahman is the inferior because it's not conscious. So we're superior Brahman because we're conscious, but that doesn't mean we're supreme Brahman. But in other words, this is inferior Brahman, it's unconscious. Then we're Brahman because we're conscious. Then there's the internal potency, which is superior to us Brahman because it's, you know, fully conscious of everything. Then there's the supreme Brahman, Krishna, who is the source of and is conscious of everything. So there's four kinds of Brahman. Right? Right, and the soul is Brahman. Yes, we are Brahman, but so is this rock. You know, does that make sense? That's the difference. A Brahmavadi will say this rock is Brahman, and I am Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? But the Mayavadi will say I am Brahman, but this rock is illusion. So that's why we say they're Mayavadis, not actually Brahmavadis. They'll say they're Brahmavadis, but that's not, you know, really. You know what I'm saying? That because this is Brahman, it's just it's inferior, it's unconscious Brahman. Then there's minuscule conscious Brahman, then unlimited conscious Brahman, then there's supreme Brahman. Okay. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10, it is stated, oh, that's four. Okay, so that's one day I heard a Vaishnav saint. Oh, however, the happiness and spiritual satisfaction I was supposed to find did not come to me, right? Because they say, you know these four. You're realized in these four. You've come to this Paramahamsa platform. So then Paramahamsa means you're Brahman realized. So they just kind of sit back. He still has all the upadis, and now instead of just being a sannyasi, now you're God. So it's not that they reduce the upadis, they increase it, right? You know? But, you know, so there for them, Paramahamsa means now I am God, while before I was hadn't realized. But, you know, so that's the difference there. So their Paramahamsa and our Paramahamsa are two different things. Right? In other words, for us, it's you've gone from Paribrajakacharya into Mayaya Apritigyana. Right? So that's their Paramahamsa stage. Right? When your intelligence has been totally stolen by Maya, then you've come to the Mayavadi's concept of the Paramahamsa stage of sannyas. Yes. So. But you're supposed to be happy at that stage. That's what they're telling you. Brahmananda, then you'll be happy. But he's pointing out, however, the happiness and spiritual satisfaction I was supposed to find did not come to me. That's the problem. Anyone who's practiced it up to that point always gets disappointed. Right? So what's the next stage? I don't know if anybody remembers from previous.
Buddhism.
Because now I tried this, it didn't work, so therefore it's all void. That's the next. And therefore, also we see in Buddhism, it allows for that sensual element to come in. Because then you start coming back around. And then next is then karma. Then that doesn't work. Then okay, because that was all illusion. Then jnana. That doesn't work. Then that's how we keep going. So that we'll get into in Tattva Vivek. One day I heard a Vaishnav saint loudly singing the glorious pastimes of Sri Hari. I opened my eyes and saw the hairs of his body standing on end and tears cascading down his cheeks, soaking him. Rapturously he sang Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. The sight of him and the sound of his song stirred up such unknown emotions in me that I find it impossible to fully describe. So now we can see is he was actually had that Brahman realization. Right? But it wasn't complete because it wasn't in connection with Supreme Brahman. But he was situated spiritually, therefore he could appreciate the transcendental. Because others are hearing, they're not appreciating. Right? How many Mayavadis do we hear of that come in contact and have gotten benefit? Right? Of course, famous Sukadeva and Sanat Kumar. But also, then we hear in Chaitanya pastimes, then Prabodhananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma, and then here in this story, taking cue from that, this sannyasi. Otherwise, all the other sannyasis, they're seeing Lord Chaitanya in his pastime, but they're criticizing. Right? That will Kashi Mishra got upset. He didn't know what to say. So he couldn't defeat them in argument.
Right.
So he left the place. You understand? So it's actually very rare, though they say they're on that platform, if they were, they would appreciate what the Gaudiyas are doing. Right? But if they don't appreciate, means they're not actually on their Paramahamsa platform. Although that mystical experience was so overwhelming, in order to protect my status as a Paramahamsa, I did not speak with him at all. Right? Still, even though he's Paramahamsa, he doesn't want to lose his status. Right? So that's why we say it's not actually real, because you're God. You don't want to, you know, not be God anymore. Hey, I worked hard to get to this platform and be God, and now I'm just going to be a normal sannyasi again? Oh my God. Alas, fie on my rank and status. Cursed be my destiny. Shortly thereafter, I became obsessed with the desire to find that Vaishnava sadhu. But I could not see him anywhere, right? So Krishna arranged it that he saw, and then he disappeared. Why? Because then he's really going to look. Because otherwise, you may find him and then maybe take it, maybe not. But you create more of that desire, that lalium. Then he looks and looks and looks, so it gets more and more prominent. So then when he finds it, he'll take it seriously. Right? Means if you have something valuable and you lost it, and then you look on the floor and there it is, then there's not much of a thing. But if you can't find it, you're looking all over, and when you finally do find it, you take much more care of it. Does that make sense? From that time on, for some unknown reason, my mind has become attracted to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I clearly perceive that by seeing this Vaishnav saint and hearing his chanting of Krishna's name, I had experienced the pure joy I had never felt before, an intense bliss I had never believed possible for a human being. In the footnote, in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10, it is stated, all different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma, or spiritual self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service under the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls, right? So that means he was liberated. So he is special in this. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, transcendental bliss in the realization of impersonal Brahman becomes comparable to the scanty water contained in the pit made by a cow's hoof. It is nothing compared with the ocean of bliss of the vision of the personality of Godhead. The personal form of Sri Krishna is so attractive that it comprehends all attraction, all bliss and all tastes, rasa. These attractions are so strong that no one wants to exchange them for material enjoyment, mystic powers and liberation, right? So what are we dealing with here? The position of liberation, right? That is sankarshan. But there's no rasa, there's no taste there, right? So they work very hard, but having obtained it, right, there's nothing special, right? What is their drive? It's the idea that they will be happy. It's not that they're tasting it, it's that it will be good, But the problem is because it's still a material concept. In other words, Brahman realization not connected with the Supreme Brahman, right, is material. You understand? It's a material concept. They're situated spiritually, but it's a material concept. Just like the Paramatma not connected to the Bhagavan is a material concept. Because it's Bhagavan who is localized. You understand? These aren't concepts of the spiritual world. That's how you can get this overlap. Right? Because this is the problem area, is the overlap. It is spiritual, but it's not bhakti. But it's material, but it's not conditioned. You understand? That's why it's so hard to understand. That's why, you know, basically we're going to spend 9 years of analyzation of this point. Right? Don't worry, when we get to the last 3 years, we won't be analyzing this anymore. Okay? Does that make sense? Yes.
That's what you meant to call by material, spiritual, and devotional.
Yes, yeah. So it's probably sometimes it would be devotional or even transcendental. So if we're using spiritual and transcendental, spiritual and devotional, you know, or transcendental and devotional, if we're making a distinction there, that means you're talking about the liberated platform, the Brahman platform, and then the platform of devotion, the Bhagavan realization. But if you use it just simply, if you're talking about devotees, then you mean Bhagavan realization. But if you're talking about philosophy, then you're talking generally about just being situated spiritual. Like the word perfect generally means liberation. Right? So when Prabhupada says perfection, that means liberation, Brahma Bhuta. It generally doesn't mean bhakti. Though it's the perfection of perfection. Does that make sense? So there's always, if you're talking general, then we don't make a distinction between the two. But when we're analyzing the philosophy, then we make it into these three steps. Material, spiritual, devotional. Right? But the idea is to go from material to devotion. But those areas that we can do that, we just do that. Like, let's say, chanting japa, we don't have a problem. So we just go straight from material to spirit, to devotional. But areas that we have problems, that's where we break it down and analyze it. What's the spiritual element, what's the material element, and all that. And until we get it down to the bare bones, then we can see what can be connected to Krishna and what is useless. Does that make sense? Then we get purified. So it's mechanical to use that, but very useful. So here is that. Now, the attraction, that's Prajumna. Does that make sense? So this is where then Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev come in. So there's a distinction there. So we can say a spiritual means Sankarshan. And then that devotional is Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva. Right? So that's why then the Acharyas make that distinction between the spiritual platform and the devotional platform. Right? It's already been made that the happiness in the material world is like a drop compared to the ocean of happiness of Brahman. But then we see here is then that happiness of Brahman is like a calf's hoofprint compared to the unlimited ocean of bhakti. Why is that made? It's not made for the Mayavadis. Right? It's not that the Mayavadis are worried about it and come read Bhagavatam and therefore surrender when they hear this. Right? It's made for us. Because we think if I get rid of all this material pain, then I'll be happy. No. That happiness you'll get, yes, it'll be much greater than the stress that comes from material problems, attachment. But it's nowhere near the unlimited happiness that comes from the devotional. So, because Brahma Bhuta is the liberated platform, we don't want to get stuck there. Right? Bhava's not enough. It's a bud. It's not the open flower. You know what I'm saying? That the tree is giving buds, you don't say, okay, now it's done. No, when it gives the fruits and the flower, when the flower opens and the fruit, that's full. You understand? Does that make sense? Like, let's say you're going out and picking flowers, right? And then there's a whole group of buds and there's one flower that's open. and you have a kid with you or somebody else with you who doesn't know much, and they go to pick the flower and pick all the buds, what are you going to say? Huh? It's not flower, but yeah, it's a waste. Why? Because it could open. Does that make sense? So in other words, the concept that the bud is not complete, that's an eternal principle. So therefore, getting to the Brahman platform is still not complete. It's a bud. It's reality. But it's still not open. Right? We have to be comfortable with this understanding of how we deal with Brahman. That doesn't mean it's Mayavad. No, the Mayavadis don't actually understand Brahman. We're the ones who understand Brahman. They claim to, but not really. You know, just like here, they claim to be Paramahamsa, but they're not really. Okay.
So, Maharaj?
Yes.
Is it to team with the Jaiva Dhamma? Like to come from the ancestral tradition?
Yes. Means you're taking a sannyasa here. Means, in other words, why are we starting with this sannyasi? Basically, we're already starting with the spiritual platform. Then we'll go on beyond that. But at the same time, we're going to deal with all aspects of mundanity. Everything. All means from this, all the stories. Now we're introducing the sannyasi in the scene. After that, we'll get into all. Every chapter, there's a conversation. And that conversation will establish some essential aspect of understanding the philosophy. Does that make sense? Yes.
So dealing with the mundane will be from the devotional standpoint.
Yes.
How to deal with.
Yes. How it's it. Yeah. Like that. So it's not going to be so much from the Puranic standpoint, where you're going to be inside it because I'm here and you're starting from here and moving it forward. They're going to show you how to look at it. Right? Because the Puranas have already given the examples of the Grihastha, you know, and he wants to, I mean, the person, he wants to get married, or he's married, he wants to have children, or he has family, he needs money, or he needs a house, or something else. Those have already been dealt with in the Puranas. Now we're getting right down to the essential of the Gaudiya Siddhanta. Does that make sense? So that's what the Anuchana class does. That'll give you all those backgrounds. Okay. So here. Okay. It's nothing compared to the ocean of bliss to the vision of Godhead, right? So that means that Sankarshan platform is just existence, right? But Sankarshan includes everything, right? Because there's no difference between Sankarshan, Prajumna, Ariyudha, and Vasudeva. It's just which ones they're prominently manifesting. They're the same person. They have all the qualities. But they're only manifesting this particular aspect. You know, it's not like Vamanadeva's little dinky guy. He can't get any bigger, and he really wishes he could. Right? Because he gets bigger than any other incarnation that there is. Right? So big, he fills up the universe and pokes his toes outside. Right? So that means, pokes his toes outside means he has to go through all the coverings. How many coverings?
Seven.
Okay. Everything's in seven. There's a magic number. The seven cities, the seven layers, the seven weeps. Okay. So, right? Does that make sense? So that is way bigger than the inside. Because the first one is 10 times bigger. So the inside of the universe is 2 billion across, right? 4 billion. Oh, I see. 2 billion above in air and 2 billion in water. So 4 billion. So that means the first one is 40 billion. And then 10 times that, 10 times that. So the coverings are way, way bigger than inside. So he poked his foot all the way through that out. You know, and then 10 fingers. That means that's five, that's five, that much more. Beyond. Just to show he could do it. And because of that, that left a hole that the Viraja, which is the, you know, the spiritual, the Jamuna, you know, the Ganga, came through, and then we get the Ganges. Understand? So it's not that he can't be bigger than anybody. He's the smallest of all the incarnations, but does that make sense? So when we say Sankarshan is existence, it's because existence is there. It means without existence, without a situation, how do you deal? So just the existence, that's Sankarshan. Right? And then his Yoga Maya, because that's what Yoga Maya is. She is all the things, that manifestation of that existence. Then Prajumna is your attraction within that. Aniruddha is the goal you want to get. Vasudeva is the activities that happen. Does that make sense? Okay. So here it says, these attractions, right? So that means, are so strong, that means, you know, how you say, prajumna, no? Are so strong that no one wants to exchange them for material enjoyment, mystic powers, and liberation, right? So these are what everybody's going mad about. But it's so great, you don't want that. And this is just the attraction. He hasn't even gotten taste of love of God. This is just the attraction is so much beyond the Brahman platform. There's no need of logical arguments in support of this statement. But out of one's own nature, one becomes attracted by the qualities of Lord Shri Krishna. Right? We establish that he is attractive because he's the supreme. He is the origin of everything. We can establish that he is attractive. But there's no logic necessary to explain one's attraction. Yes.
Is this Ruchi?
Ruchi, yeah. We must know for certain that the qualities of the Lord have nothing to do with mundane qualities. Right? These are simply the reflections of... Because mundane means it's being used outside the Lord. Yes.
This also shows that one cannot preach attraction to somebody.
No, you can preach about it, but you can't preach the attraction. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can discuss, yes. If boys, young boys and young girls are together, they can get attracted. You can explain that, but their attraction, that you that's not a matter of logic. It means it has its pattern, so you can explain rasa. But it's not a matter of logic. It has its own how you say, what would be the word? Its own definition. Does that make sense? You know, just like I can explain to you that this preparation, you know, it's a very nice taste and it's a combination of these and that and so many elements, but the taste itself, that's not a matter of logic. That's just a matter of tasting it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, say, oh, very rich. Okay, that's because we use some butter or something like that. Or, you know, very full flavor. That's because we use the spices. Or very, you know, fresh. That's because, you know, the way we... You understand? We can explain that. But the taste itself, that's not logic.
Would you say it's experiential?
Experiential. So that's the whole point, is we discuss the philosophy we've heard, that shabda, but it has to come down to pratyaksha, that you experience it. Then you can say it's complete. That's what is realization. That's your value. If you have heard about it, that's shabda, that's jnana. But when you contemplate it, practice it, then you experience it, that's pratyaksha. Right? But if you start with pratyaksha, you're never going to get anything good. Because then your experience is going to be mundane. How do you get that to spiritual? You start with the spiritual, apply that to the material situation. Because material is mundane because it's not spiritual. Okay. There's no need of logical arguments in support of this statement. But out of one's nature, one becomes attracted by the qualities of Sri Krishna. We must know for certain that the qualities of the Lord have nothing to do with mundane qualities. All of them are full of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. There are innumerable qualities of the Lord, and one is attracted by one quality, while another is attracted by another, right? Because there's unlimited quality, so that's the individuality. Everybody's attracted by particular qualities. That's what gives one one's particular situation as one's particular rasa. Great sages such as the four bachelor devotees, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, were attracted by the fragrance of flowers and tulsi leaves anointed with the pulp of sandalwood, offered at the lotus feet of the Lord. What's interesting here is that they're attracted, another, you know, this element of prajumna, to the Lord. Sanat Kumar is prajumna. He is Cupid. So that's what we mean by Madan Mohan. Is Sanat Kumar is Cupid. But he's attracted by Krishna. That's why it's so significant, this example. Right? Similarly, Sukadeva Goswami was attracted by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami was already situated in the liberated stage, yet he was attracted by the pastimes of the Lord. Right? He was situated, so there was no need to go anywhere. But when he heard the pastimes of the Lord, then he wanted to come out and hear more about them. This proves that the quality of his pastimes has nothing to do with material affinity. Similarly, the young cowherd damsels were attracted by the bodily features of the Lord, and Rukmini was attracted by hearing about the glories of the Lord. Right? The cowherd damsels saw Krishna, and they were, or heard about it. Like that. Radharani, she heard from different devotees about Krishna. Right? And she thought she was attracted to three different boys. So she was very upset. Right? She didn't realize it was the same boy. It was just Govinda, Gopinath, and Madan Mohan. Right? The different aspects, his attractiveness, you know, that of love and that his pastimes. So she didn't understand that until she met Krishna. Lord Krishna attracts even the mind of the goddess of fortune. He attracts, in special cases, the minds of all young girls. Right? Special case means when they're in that devotional mood, then they'll be attracted. Right? Next moment they'll walk out of the temple and then, whoa, you know, like that stuff. He attracts the minds of the elderly ladies by paternal affection. He attracts the minds of the male in the humors of servitude and friendship. Okay. Then back to the story. Thus, I decided to take shelter at the feet of a Vaishnava. I left Kashi and went to Vrindavan Dham. Right, so Kashi's Varanasi. That's the seat. Right, because this is just afterwards. You know, after Lord Chaitanya's left. Like that. But still, there's, you know, a few of the associates are still left. So presumably the Brahmachari is still there. There I saw many Vaishnavas. That's... Huh? Almost. Oh, one more. There I saw many Vaishnavas who spoke of Sri Navadvip Dham. Who spoke of Sri Navadvip Dham, go immediately into ecstasy and fall down to roll in the dust. My desire to see Navadvip increased greatly, and after first circumambulating the area of Rajadham, I started for Navadvip. I arrived here in Mayapur, and hearing your praises, I have come to find shelter at your feet. Kindly bestow your mercy upon me and accept me as your servant, making my life worthwhile and complete. Right? So he's in Varanasi, he's practicing, he knows everything there is to know in their line. He has practiced all the practices, come to that perfectional stage. Then he found that there's nothing there. He became attracted by the Vaishnava devotee who was chanting Lord Chaitanya's name. He went searching, so you know, he hears about it, they talk about Vrindavan, so he goes there. Right, they talk about Lord Chaitanya and Navadvip, so then he comes back here in Navadvip. Then they all talk about Prajumna, because he, not Prajumna, Premdas Babaji, because he's prominent. So now he's come and now he's surrendered. Okay, so then we'll continue tomorrow the story. Chai.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Sambhavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.